Hello, beautiful people. This is the Michael Slate Show, and I am your guest host, Sansara Taylor. On today's show, we'll be sharing segments from the RNL Revolution Nothing Less show, which airs on YouTube. Let's begin.
Hello and welcome to the RNL Revolution Nothing Less show. I'm one of the co-hosts of this show, Annie Day, and I'm thrilled to be in studio with Michelle Chai.
It's very exciting to be here with you and welcome everyone watching at home. This show is about a real revolution, a revolution to abolish, to overthrow this whole system of capitalism and imperialism, to fight for a radically emancipating future. And we base ourselves on the new communism that has been developed by the revolutionary leader, Babavakian.
And you'll be hearing more from Babavakian later in today's show, a theme of which is the role that you need to play in this historic moment. You know, you're looking at how rapidly this fascist regime is moving, literally on every front, like a fascist tsunami. Just in the last couple of days, Trump has eviscerated, basically gutted the Environmental Protection Agency, putting this climate change on rapid fire steroids. He's accused the former president of the United States with treason, which is a crime punishable by death.
Yeah. I mean, you think about it, like you're talking about Obama, you know, former president of this country, somebody that's like up there in, you know, running the system. Right. And if he's able to, and he's like openly, you know, going after somebody like that, and if he's able to accomplish this, right, think about what this is going to mean, what he's going to do to ordinary people. I mean, this is dangerous, right? And then another thing I was going to say on this Environmental Protection Agency, like it made me think about last week's show in somebody's speech. You know, they made this point that this is actually an existential question, right? It's not just a question of how it's going to, this fascism, how it's not just going to affect like people in this country, but you're talking about humanity and the planet.
Yeah. And it is, we really don't have much time. That's what people have to understand here. Another aspect we want to bring in is what is happening in Texas right now, where they're entirely redrawing the election map. And openly, Trump is bragging about this. Oh, we got five more seats.
Five. I think we get five. And there could be some other states. We're going to get another three or four or five in addition. Texas would be the biggest one, and that'll be fine.
It just underscores the lunacy of people who say, well, we're going to wait till 2026, aside from the fact that the world cannot stand one more day of this fascist regime and the danger to humanity and the planet. But they're moving to steal the election in front of your eyes. Mm-hmm.
Again, another thing that stood out from last week's show was, you know, this thing of what is it actually going to take to stop this, right? And a lot of people I know, you know, people are seeing this and are feeling overwhelmed and are feeling like, you know, with big questions. And we'll get into and address some of this in today's show, right? But I think, you know, it is, people do have to confront and recognize that it is actually going to take something going way beyond protests as usual. You know, it is actually going to take resistance that is aimed at defeating and ousting this regime from power.
Yeah, that is a change in understanding of people just going from expressing your outrage, as righteous as that is, to a determination. And this has to happen on the part of millions of people that we have to do nothing less than drive this regime from power in acting in sustained, very determined, but nonviolent protest. And that really does have to happen now. And we're going to talk in this show about how that is not just necessary, but also possible if those of us who see the danger are acting commensurate with that. Another part of what needs to happen is a mass and constant disturbing the air to prevent the normalization of this fascism. So there's an organization, refusefascism.org, which is made up of people from different perspectives who recognize this extreme danger. And on Monday, they called for a mass day of no business as usual, when the business as usual is the cementing of fascism. So let's watch a short clip of that.
We blow these whistles because no decent person can stand by as Trump's ICE Gestapo kidnaps our immigrant sisters and brothers and locks them in vile concentration camps.
That's right.
We are blowing the whistle on ICE, on their raids, their terror. Mm-hmm. ICE is Trump's Gestapo. And the scapegoating, demonization, and ethnic cleansing of immigrants is a battering ram to a whole fascist regime. It is on us to shut it down.
My name is Nathaniel St-Pierre. I am a priest of the Episcopal Church. I'm here to say that yesterday we prayed, but today we stand. Prayer is not enough. We need to get involved. I am a black man, and unfortunately, when I am on the street, I don't have an identity. No matter what passport I carry, I can be taken and be kidnapped. So I am standing with everyone asking that Trump must go now.
The whistle day, or the not no business as usual day, was pretty fun. I mean, I was kind of seeing some of the stuff happening all over the country. And then also here in LA, we actually were able to have different points across the city, right? I think there might have been like 10 different places where we were here in the city. And I went back to East LA where we marched this past weekend, and we were with a, you know, a grouping of other people. We had our whistles, we were banging on drums, you know, we were chanting Trump must go. We were going through the neighborhood, getting people the whistles, right? And actually like telling them, when you see ICE, this, you know, blow the whistle on ICE, shut down the whole fascist regime, right? And at a certain point, somebody comes out of their house with a cowbell and starts like banging on their cowbell, right? And, you know, and kind of just having a conversation with them. They really were like appreciative of this action. And at the same time, they were saying, look, I think we're too late. You know, they were really confronting, right, all of the horrors that this regime is actually like, you know, moving. And they recognize, you know, they were making the analogy of like of Hitler in Nazi Germany, right? And they just kind of said, well, look, we're at the point where, you know, Hitler has put the Jewish people in concentration camps. Like, I don't think there's anything we could do about this, right? And this is her, this is while she's like banging her cowbell, you know, and kind of still feeling like the urgency to actually act, right? And I was thinking about, there's both sides of like, you know, the people that like her, like this person, right, that actually do see the danger and still have this question of like, okay, how are we going to do this? You know, is it even possible to do this, right? And then there's the other side of like a lot that we've run into of people that, you know, they see that things are bad and they even act on it, but still it's kind of like, you know, both of these arguments and both of these, like, you know, how people are seeing things actually leave out the role of the masses in our millions, right? Actually rising up and disrupting business as usual and not allowing this fascism to actually carry out all of these, you know, these horrors that people really deeply hate, you know? And I think this is a big question that we're up against. And so, you know,
I just want to say, yeah, it is a big question we're up against. And part of the struggle, I think, that has to be waged. First of all, we don't know if it's too late or not. Mm-hmm. And we do know that you better not act like it's a foregone conclusion. You actually have a role to play right now in stopping it from becoming too late. And part of the struggle that we should wage with that woman and with everybody else that we can reach is, urgently, defeating this regime has to become people's number one, their highest priority. Now, that doesn't mean don't read a book. That doesn't mean don't go for a walk, that whatever. But I mean, in life, reordering your priorities, where this actually, defeating this regime, exactly because of the stakes for humanity and people in this country. And I'll just tell a story briefly. I was talking to a very close friend of mine, and they were talking about kind of making future life plans. You know, do they want to move to a beach town, whatever. And they were talking about sitting on the beach and enjoying the sun, and it was beautiful. And then they looked around and they thought to themselves, what am I doing? I don't know what the future is going to be like in 2 years. And I'm sitting here like the people that lived outside of Auschwitz, just going along with this, like it's normal, like I'm okay with this. And they were calling themselves up short about, are they going to be complicit, and recognizing the complicity of making future plans in a world where fascism is rapidly consolidating without figuring out how they're going to put themselves on the line to prevent that consolidation. So I think with that, we want to go into an answer from Sansara Taylor, where she talks more about the strategy of Refuse Fascism, but also how it's possible to defeat this fascist regime. And again, people watching this should really think about what more important thing could I be doing right now than giving my all to the, you know, world historic fight to actually defeat Trump MAGA fascism.
A lot of people have responded to my point about not appealing to the Trumpers. Some people have said, look, how do you talk to them if they're family members? That's worth doing. Those are people in your life. Maybe it's worth doing. You have to decide that. I'm not telling you to cut them off. Some people do need to be cut off. That's a choice you're going to have to make. But we're saying as a strategy for how to defeat Trump MAGA fascism, to prevent them from controlling the future, that strategy requires that the regime have its hands pried from the levers of power. We're not out here to just win over hearts and minds and who cares where the future goes. We're out to change the future. And frankly, through the mass struggle, that's how most people will get their hearts and minds changed who are on the wrong side. I will tell one story. During the George Floyd uprising, at its high tide, there was a mass phenomenon when there were millions in the streets protesting, resisting, saying Black Lives Matter, putting their bodies on the line, facing down rubber bullets and tear gas and all the rest, and brutal assault by police, and coming out again and again and again in the face of Trump and his military Black Hawk helicopters and all their threats, and tattoo parlors in the South. And it was not just one or two, it was a phenomenon, opened up and said, we will for free remove Confederate flag tattoos. We will for free remove white pride tattoos. And there was a lot of people, white people, who went in to get their tattoos removed who had never been compelled to think about it before. The struggle is what pried their eyes open. And I read interviews with some of these people who said, one of them had a 4-year-old child and said, you know, I never really thought about what the Confederate flag meant. He never had to. He lived in a white society, white supremacist inculcated culture and society where that was like the, you know, just the air he breathed. And he never had it challenged. When he had it challenged, he said, I don't want my kid to grow up thinking this is who his dad was. And he got his tattoo removed. And these parlors opened it up for free. And I could go through examples in the civil rights movement, through the women's liberation movement, through the anti-Vietnam War movement, where people had their minds changed because of the struggle that was waged on a societal level, where they were compelled to start thinking about things they'd never had to think about before. And they said, what do those people know and understand that makes them feel so strongly they will put themselves on the line and they will not stop? What do they understand that I don't understand? And some people double down in their backwardsness and their bigotry, and some people open up and say, what's that about? And they come forward. That we need. And somebody else raised, there's some people who used to be Trump supporters who have gotten disaffected by Trump and come around. We have to have wide open arms and welcome them in. My point is not to say, F you could never do right. My point is we don't have time. And our strategy is not to win every individual over. Our strategy is to change the course of history. That will also have the biggest effect on all the individuals who are on the wrong side, but it'll have an even bigger effect and a more meaningful effect on all those who are in the line of fire of this regime, who are under the gun of this regime, whose lives are being shattered by it, and the millions more who will be if we do not move the decent people who are there, who care, who already have the raw material, but are not acting the ways they need to act. We have to model that kind of action, and we have to struggle with them. The elections are too late. The courts will not stop it. The Democrats will not do this for you. There is nobody else but you and me and people like us, and we have to act now. If we want them to act, we have to act. And so that's where our struggle is focused, and everybody's welcome. And if you weren't here yesterday, come on in today and learn as you go, and we'll learn from each other. And there's plenty of space for that. We need that. No positive change for the people. No dismantling of structural injustice in society has ever come about without people going outside the normal channels of electoral politics, politics as usual, and what seems politically realistic and possible in that moment. The politics of the possible. This is a quote from Bob Avakian. He said it years ago. The politics of the possible is the politics of monstrosity. If you restrict yourself to what seems politically possible as the rulers of the society and the normal functioning of it presents itself, you are accepting and accommodating to the politics of atrocity. And we see that very vividly today. And that's why did people do this freedom ride? The freedom rides, I should say, plural, and the freedom summer and the civil rights movement. Why did people walk across the Edmund Pettus Bridge? Because they wanted to make what was politically impossible possible, because they refused to accept a world and they refused to make peace with the world and find their place in a world where Black people were openly terrorized, subjugated, and lynched routinely. And you could go down the list, the same with the LGBTQ movements, the same with what had happened against the Vietnam War. You could go down the list, the way that women won the right to abortion. This was not by sitting back and calculating political possibilities. People got out of bounds and they changed what was possible. And until, look, every major social cataclysm, and they say this about revolutions, but also in times when regimes are unseated short of revolution, they say it always looks impossible the day before it happens. And the day after, everybody says, well, that was inevitable, because it seems so clear how many people were in motion demanding it. And so I just want to say, if we start with what seems realistic and possible, we are giving up the future, and it is unacceptable. And I don't just say that because, like, let's believe the impossible. You know, Alice in Wonderland, I think about six impossible things every morning before breakfast. I'm not saying impossible, really. I'm saying impossible according to politics as usual, but eminently possible in the material world if you look at the millions who do not want this. And there were thousands, and there actually were millions who got involved in different ways to win civil rights and dismantle Jim Crow. There were millions who got involved in the struggle against the Vietnam War. Each of them did, you know, Nixon had to withdraw the troops from Vietnam. He was a warmonger. That's not what he wanted to do. He wanted to escalate and threaten nuclear war against the North Vietnamese. He was forced by the actions of the people to calculate differently. He was actually compelled to leave power prematurely because of the overall crisis in society that was not just from the people, but largely by the uprising of the people, combining with contradictions among the rulers and the institutions themselves. And I will say today, there are precisely, we unseating a fascist regime is a whole different order of struggle and challenge than even stopping the Vietnam War or dismantling Jim Crow or any of the other struggles that I'm describing. But it is more possible today because there are more people being shocked and jolted and whose sense of what's decent and right is being violated in society and in the ruling institutions. And when you have a situation where Trump is calling Reagan-appointed judges lunatic Marxists and communists and creating an atmosphere where they are getting death threats, and he's talking about impeaching them because he doesn't like the way they rule, when you have a situation where the military generals are being purged of Black and women leaders, and Harriet Tubman is being removed, and Confederate generals are being re-enshrined as the names of the bases, you don't think you have a lot of dissension within the military? You don't think you have a lot of dissension within the court system? You don't think you have a lot of people within every institution of government, of society, who are deeply divided over this? If there was a struggle from below, there are a lot of splits that could open up in these institutions, and a lot of people who could act in ways that seem impossible today, but could come to the fore if there was a massive, sustained, unrelenting pressure from below. And we don't know exactly how it'll play out, but there is it is 100% realistic and possible. Guaranteed? No. Guaranteed? No. But absolutely possible. And what is guaranteed is if we sit back and wait for politics as usual, we will be swallowed by a nightmare and a horror, not just us, but immigrants, Black people, trans people, women, and people all over the world whose lives are being destroyed by this regime already, and the whole climate destruction they are accelerating. If the guarantee is if we do not oust this regime, it will be a nightmare beyond what most people can imagine.
That was Sansara Taylor, one of the co-hosts of this show and one of the leaders of RefuseFascism.org. And people should stay tuned to their website to find out more what else they're doing, what other actions they're calling for. But wherever you are, take up this call to disturb the air through, I think, every Friday they're doing these noise protests. Really, there can be no normalization as fascism is consolidating. We have to stop that. So people should also spread what she just said about how it's possible to actually stop this. Now we want to go into a clip from the revolutionary leader, Bob Avakian, from an interview that was done in 2022. People should watch this in full. Really, going back to it is very, very special, and it's profoundly urgent in this moment. And here Bob Avakian talks about a really deep ideological question that everyone watching has to confront.
You're talking about looking at the roots of what puts people in the conditions they're in. There's another dimension in what you were speaking to that I was hoping you could speak a little bit further to, which is that people have to be struggled with to think not just about themselves, what happened to me and those immediately around me, and to think about, you've actually called out quite a bit, all the individualism in this society, and to think about humanity as a whole and the larger, more than oneself. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, that's a big problem, you know. I mean, look, everybody is an individual and everybody has individual needs. And, you know, the point is not to ignore that or totally discount it. But there are much bigger things happening in the world that shape what the lives of individuals are all about. Why are you competing with somebody for a job? Why are you, if you're, you know, a student, why are you competing with somebody else to get a grant, you know, a loan? A position in this college instead of that college, you know, why every time you turn around are you in competition with people? It's because of the nature of the underlying character of the economic system that functions in such a way that you have to do this in order to advance individually. And if you want to change that situation, you have to get to the root of it and get rid of a system that forces people to do this. You know, the white supremacy, the male supremacy, they're built into this system. The very functioning of the system reinforces these things. I mean, I was talking just a little while ago about this fascism. You know, why are there these fascists? Well, the change in character, you know, in large part, the change in character of what's been going on in the economy, for example, has led to situations where, you know, a lot of the better paying industrial jobs that a lot of men had are gone, and they're not coming back. That's the nature of the parasitism, the feeding off the rest of the world that characterizes this capitalist imperialist system at this time. There was also changes in the economy and in combination with struggle that opened up a lot of both possibility but also necessity for women to go into the workforce and into things like colleges and so on in much greater numbers than before. And I was talking about this with people a little while ago. You know, why do you have things like, you know, this incel phenomenon and this, you know, massive pornography and all the rest of it? And no, it is not agency, it's oppression, it's degradation of women as a whole, okay? You know, why do you have that? It's revenge. It's a form of revenge against the fact that women are not as easily controlled as they were in previous generations. And, you know, a lot of women find themselves in positions where they're not entirely obviously free of all the male supremacy, let's not kid ourselves. But they don't have the same necessity to put up with some of the really outrageous shit that they had to put up with before. They always hated it. But now they find themselves, you know, in a different, maybe better financial position, you know, and there's a whole change in the culture, and they don't feel they have to put up with this stuff. And so, you know, a lot of these incels, you know, they want women to be readily available to provide them with the kind of sex they want whenever they want it. And there are a lot of women that are not going to do that. You know, well, that has to do with underlying changes in the character of the economy, ultimately. and which is, goes hand in hand with changes in the social relations. So, you know, this, what was the question again?
I was asking about the me, but this is also, it's related, but go ahead.
Yeah, well, you know, so the problem is all this that I'm talking about cannot be solved by each individual trying to pursue their individual interests. It's just way too big. You know, the underlying driving forces are just shaping things. Now we're back on the
There point. We are. You
know, they're just shaping things in such a way that it's way bigger than any individual. The climate, what's happening with it, is way bigger than any individual. The threat of nuclear war is way bigger than any individual. The mass shooting of Black people, Latinos, and Native Americans by police is way bigger than any individual. You know, the constant brutality, you know, even by intimate loved ones against women, the massive rapes, you know, like you talk about college students and all the women, one of the first things they talk about is, especially in relation to the taking away of the right to abortion, but more generally, is they're all afraid of being raped. That's way bigger than any individual. So you have to, you know, you have to think in big terms about how are we going to deal with these big problems that are way bigger than any individual. And in order to determine how you're going to deal with them, you have to look at what's underlying cause of them. What has given rise to these particular things we're talking about? You know, what are all these oppressive relations ultimately rooted in? They're rooted in the nature of the underlying dynamics of the economic system. You know, why, for example, is there massive sex trafficking, on a level beyond, you know, there's always been these kind of horrors, and no, that's not agency either, okay? That's horrific oppression and literal enslavement of the, you know, most horrific kind. But why are millions and millions of women and girls sex trafficked around the world? Why are so many vulnerable to that? You know, it's because of changes that have gone on in the economy, you know, with imperialist domination of agriculture, for example, in the third world to a large extent, way beyond what it was previously. A lot of self-sustaining basic agriculture, say on the, you know, family basis, has been undermined, and people can no longer live that way. And so you've got a tremendous depopulation from the countryside throughout the third world, you know, Latin America, Africa, Middle East, and Asia. You've got tremendous depopulation of the countryside and, you know, billions of people, you know, moving into shanty towns surrounding the cities of these countries. I mean, you can look at, you know, Kenya, you can look at Angola, you know, you can look at Brazil, wherever you go. Is it, you know, it is now the case that for the first time in the history of humanity, the majority of people live in urban areas. So, but this means that there's been a tremendous depopulation of the countryside. So, you know, people are thrown into these chaotic conditions where they, you know, in these shanty towns where they can't be and aren't integrated into the formal economy. In a lot of these countries, the majority of people are working in the informal economy, you know, just like, you know, small-scale trading, or, you know, picking up a job here or there, or illegal activity. And so, you know, if you're a woman coming from the countryside, completely uprooted, you know, and you can't find a way any other way, you are very vulnerable to being tricked or forced into the whole, you know, international sex trafficking. Now, that has to do with the social relations of oppression of women, but what has made it such a mass phenomenon is the underlying changes that have been brought about by the very functioning of the capitalist imperialist system as an international system of exploitation and super exploitation of people in these poorer countries. So, you know, if you just try to, how in the world are you going to solve that? Any of those things I just mentioned, by everybody going for themselves and staying in your lane. As I point out to people, we need to make people aware that staying in your lane will not protect you from being run over by the system. So, you know, these things have to be solved by people recognizing what's going on, getting to the root of it, and then acting collectively to transform all this. And it doesn't mean individuals don't count. Of course they count. But that's in the context of the larger things that are going on.
Again, that was Bob Avakian, the revolutionary leader. You can watch that interview in full from 2022 at youtube.com/BobAvakianOfficial. Really dig into this and heed the challenge. It's very scientific. It's very inspiring.
Yeah. I mean, you get a sense just from that clip, the kind of leadership that we have, you know, in this revolution. I mean, it's really mind blowing, like taking you from like, you know, when people are just so, you know, kind of dealing with everything around them. And it's real. I mean, you know, it's like overwhelming. And then a lot of people are just kind of thinking about, you know, somebody in the RevCom core, you know, kind of raised recently, like it's actually a struggle. It's literally people are on survival mode, you know, just stepping outside the doors of their homes, you know. And so people dealing, you know, how do people like actually deal with things like that, you know? And here's Bob Avakian actually stepping people back, not to say you and what you're dealing with, but actually to say, like, how do we even deal with individuals? And, you know, is in that context, right? And understanding, like, even how we got to this point, right? And so I think that's kind of, you know, just in the, what, like 8-10 minutes that we just watched that, you get a sense of, you know, a leader that's, you know, speaking to millions right now, when this is a question that is alive in millions of people's thinking, right? And here, you know, locally, the with the Rev Core, we've been getting into a lot of these ideological questions when, again, you're running up and you're running up against it, right? And people are trying to actually figure out how to deal with it. And you're confronting, you know, the real danger that we're up against, right? And what is one actually going to put themselves to, right?
And you cannot understand what you're up against, and you cannot solve it by yourself. Mm-hmm. So then there's a question of understanding scientifically what it is that we're dealing with, and then making a commitment to be about more than yourself.
Yeah. And I think some of, like, off of some of this, you know, I wanted to tell a story, yeah, like, you know, off of some of this struggle of, like, you know, really getting the RevCom core like on a mission. You know, here's, you know, we're going to hear from Noche speaking to some of this, but here we are in a moment where we could be like recruiting, like, you know, waves of people right now into the RevCom core. And so that means getting our ducks in a row, getting our shit together, you know? So here we're like, you know, in LA, we're like radically reorganizing our organizing center to make it a place where people can find the RevCom core, get organized with the RevComs, watch, you know, Bob Avakian through these interviews, through the social media messages. And as, you know, and when we're beginning some of that, we're cleaning up and all this, we're going through our posters, and one of the people that have been part of some of this discussion, like, found this provocation posters that we were, you know, doing to putting up everywhere, you know, all over nationally, to when we were getting out with these interviews, right? And one of them, it, like, he just loved it. He pulled it out and he reads it, and it's something like, me, 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 what about humanity? And he said, wow, these need to be put up everywhere, you know? And like, and we were kind of going like, wow, well, isn't that relevant to, like, hello, you know, some of the discussion that we're having, you know? And it's just like, you know, the kind of questions and the kind of, like, you know, you're going about your day and you see these posters, and it's going like, wow, right away, he also scanned the QR code and went, I'm gonna go watch this. You know, we gotta get people watching these clips, you know?
Yeah, and I think both being right now oriented to reaching millions and millions. And one thing I think you get is the depth of and the change in the agonizing and openness among many, 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 many people to hear answers that they would not have been ready to hear in the same way before. They are seeking. Now, they're not seeking the most radical, revolutionary way out yet. That's what we have to bring to them and wage a lot of struggle. But what you're describing about the need to actually be oriented to reach, to move thousands and millions is really right. And it's our time is now. So with that, we want to play a clip from Noche Diaz. This is a social media video he made. Noche is the national spokesperson for the RevCom Corps for the Emancipation of Humanity. And here's his stitch on TikTok responding to a video he saw online.
Bro, I'm ready. Who's going to start the revolution? We all ready to do it. Just say the word. Who's the leader? Where's Malcolm X Jr.? Point me to the leader.
there is a leader. I point you to Bob Avakian Official. Bob Avakian is not another bourgeois politician trying to make America something it never has been and never will be. Bob Avakian is a revolutionary leader. And a real revolution means defeating the violent enforcers of this system, abolishing their institutions of power, including their U.S. Constitution, and replacing it with a new constitution, which Bob Avakian has written to replace this system after the revolution. And this revolution is not about revenge or a few people getting their peace out of all this oppression and madness. It is about all people getting all the way free from all this unnecessary exploitation, oppression, and justice and madness that this system perpetrates on people here and all over the world.
Let me tell you what I am an advocate of. I am an advocate of ending oppression, exploitation, dehumanization, and degradation for people all over the world. I have spent most of my adult life actively working and fighting for this and wrangling in the level of theory and strategy to try to figure out how to actually fight through all the way and win. And it is on that basis that I have come to the conclusions that I have come to, that a revolution is needed, what kind of revolution it is, what it needs to aim for, and how we have to go about that. And I am not going to back off of that.
And Bob Avakian doesn't just need foot soldiers. He needs people who are fighting as conscious emancipators of humanity, working every day to make the revolution in the time we live in now, and becoming leaders yourselves as we work to make that revolution. Millions of people are being jolted awake, seeing the rot at the core of this country with the coming to power of Trump and his whole fascist regime. Millions need to fight to defeat that fascism, but out of those millions, thousands can be organized now into a revolutionary force that could go on to lead an actual revolution. And if you can't get with this leadership now, if you can't get with Bob Avakian because it's hard, if you can't deal with the fact that it's an old white man, if you can't deal with all the haters, you are never going to deal with this system. So if you've got the heart to fight for something worth fighting for, we want you for the RevCom Corps for the emancipation of humanity.
Israel is deliberately starving the people in Gaza and then blaming Hamas for their deaths. Trump is on again, off again, telling Netanyahu to finish it off out of one side of his mouth.
Hamas didn't really want to make a deal. I think they want to die, and it's very, very bad. And it got to be to a point where you're going to have to finish the job.
And then out of the other, saying there shouldn't be so many images of starving children. But whatever Trump says, he has doubled down on funding Israel in full, open, all-out genocidal terror. Over 2 million people in Gaza are facing mass starvation. Food and water are nearly gone. People are dropping dead from hunger, over 150 now. A third of the population doesn't eat anything at all for days at a time. The pangs of hunger hit children first and hardest. Their desperate cries for something, anything to eat, echo across neighborhoods. Acute malnutrition is hindering many doctors, journalists, and others from carrying on. Quote, people in Gaza are neither dead nor alive. They are walking corpses. This horror is not caused by a drought or a flood. It is consciously calculated by Israel, and it is totally unnecessary. Right now, the United Nations has 6,000 trucks loaded with food and medical supplies waiting on Gaza's border in Egypt and Jordan. But Israel refuses to let the supplies in. The U.S. sets up fake aid agencies, which serve to further terrorize the people of Gaza.
He has half of a bag of rice that he found on the ground, a broken bag, half a bag of lentils that he found on the ground, and he was thanking us. Thank you. This little boy from where he came from walked 12 kilometers to get there, just to get there. 12 kilometers. Look at this boy. And when he got there, he thanked us for the remnants and the small crumbs that he got. And he sets them down on the ground because I was kneeling at this point, and he sets his food down and he places his hands on my face, on the side of my face, on my cheeks. these frail, skeleton, emaciated hands, dirty. And he puts them on my face and he kissed me. He kissed me and he said, thank you, in English. Thank you. And he collected his items and he walked back to the group. And then he was shot at with pepper spray and tear gas and stun grenades and bullets shot at his feet and in the air. And he runs away scared. They're shooting into this crowd, shooting into this crowd. And Palestinians, civilians, human beings are dropping to the ground, getting shot. And Amir was one of them. Amir walked 12 kilometers to get food, got nothing but scraps, thanked us for it, and died.
Where countries say they're going to deliver a pittance of food via airdrops. Airdrops have proven deadly and extremely degrading. For a rundown of the outright lies that Israel's using to justify all this, go to our coverage at revcom.us. But I want to speak here to one of the biggest lies being repeated and put into law by Trump MAGA fascism. That standing against these crimes against humanity, standing in opposition to this nightmare that Israel is perpetrating against the Palestinian people, is the same as anti-Semitism, which means being against all Jewish people. At college campuses right now, it is considered anti-Semitic to say that Israel has no right to exist. But Israel, a Jewish supremacist state, is an illegitimate state, and it does not have a right to exist. Look, Judaism is a religion and a culture. Zionism is a political movement and force which established the state of Israel over 75 years ago as a Jewish supremacist state on the basis of the ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian people, forcibly removing masses of Palestinians from their land through terroristic means, including mass rape of women, and then subjecting the remaining Palestinians to vicious apartheid oppression and military occupation repeatedly over decades, enforced with slaughter and destruction by the Israeli military. And none of this would have been possible without the full backing of imperialist powers, including most of all, the U.S. And it has now reached undeniable, outright genocide, the slaughter of a whole people as a people, live streamed before the eyes of the whole world. As the revolutionary leader Bob Avakian said months ago,
Zionism is a Jewish supremacist ideology and political program that justifies the founding and continuation of the State of Israel on the basis of carrying out the continual brutal oppression and repeated massacres of the Palestinian people, which has now reached undeniably genocidal dimensions. As I have sharply pointed out before, especially now, in the context of the genocide being perpetrated by Israel, I stand with Israel means I stand with genocide.
In the face of the vicious repression of Trump MAGA fascism against the protests standing against this genocide, using the lie that this is aimed at protecting Jewish students, way too many have capitulated, most dangerously on college campuses across this country, campuses that were the site of these righteous protests. Again, from Bob Avakian.
Overwhelmingly, with regard to those protesting against the genocide being perpetrated by Israel, this is based on the actions of Israel, not on hatred for Jews. And it is entirely possible and definitely right to oppose the State of Israel overall, based not on hatred for Jews, but on the actual Zionist Jewish supremacist nature of Israel and how this has involved a whole history of atrocities against the Palestinian people. In fact, Zionism and the Zionist State of Israel represent terrible perversions of the best traditions of Jewish people, including the orientation that never again the cry of Jewish people in response to the genocidal massacre of Jews by Hitlerite Nazi Germany during World War II means never again must this happen to any people. This is why I have made the provocative but profoundly true statement
After the Holocaust, the worst thing that has happened to Jewish people is the state of Israel.
And I will say for myself, as someone that comes from a Jewish background, there is a tremendous responsibility for all Jewish people, as Jewish people, to say no, not in our name. And there has been righteous and inspiring resistance, including among many thousands of Jews.
I'm here with Jews for Food Aid for Gaza. This is the office of Senator John Thune, the Senate Majority Leader, Republican leader in the Senate.
A group of rabbis and other Jewish clergy representing Jews for Food Aid for People in Gaza, which is a campaign that's been signed on by tens of thousands of Jews and over 750 fellow rabbis and Jewish clergy of every major American denomination. And we're here to say and to show with the entirety of our being that we support food aid for people in Gaza and an end to the Israeli government's food blockade.
But this resistance demanding an end to this genocide still needs to grow urgently right now. Too many who were in the streets just last year are silent. On your phones, quietly in pain and turmoil, throwing your hands up in despair. But the Palestinian people are still being bombed, shot, starved, and slaughtered, and no one should stand aside. Stand up against the vicious repression of anti-genocide protest. Anti-Zionism is not anti-Semitism. Rise up and demand an end to the U.S.-Israeli genocide of the Palestinian people. Demand an end to the siege of Gaza right now. And yes, link that to a demand for an end to the all-sided consolidation of Trump MAGA fascism. The videos from Gaza rip at your heart, and they should. The images of dead babies, of limbs ripped off bodies, of parents screaming for their children. These images are seared into my soul, and yours too if you're watching. But here we want to end this segment with a video of the children from Gaza alive. With empty stomachs but alive, banging their pots and pans and singing, give us our childhood, their future is on the line.
Now we want to bring you voices from Evin Prison, a notorious dungeon in Tehran where many political prisoners are held by the Islamic Republic of Iran, a prison which has been the site of horrors, but also of righteous resistance. Just last month, Evin was bombed by Israel, and the prisoners held in Evin, including the political prisoners, were sent to even worse conditions in prisons across the country. Over these last weeks, there has been intensified repression in Iran, including a leap in executions. For more on how to support the political prisoners in Iran, go to the International Emergency Committee to free Iran's political prisoners. We demand of the Islamic Republic of Iran, free all political prisoners now. We say to the U.S. government, no war on Iran.
On May 19th, 2025, political prisoners in Iran's Evin prison launched a remarkable new online publication, Bamdad Bidar, Awake at Dawn, No to Nooses. This translation from the original Farsi was made by volunteers with the international campaign to free Iran's political prisoners. The title Bamdad Bidar has multiple meanings in Farsi. The word Bamdad, dawn, often signifies a new day. It is also the time that executions are carried out in Iran. These executions are the punctuation point to their cellmates' all-night vigil. The word bidar means awake, but when used as two words, bidar, it means no noose. The translation of the title, Awake at Dawn, No to Nooses, aims to convey the richness of the original Farsi.
As the International Emergency Campaign to Free Iran's Political Prisoners wrote, this magazine is a work of art and heart from prisoners inside Evin prison. It is full of the pain and rage of injustice, but also full of humanity and the joy of righteous resistance. Iran leads the world in executions. These are carried out on Tuesdays. And for over 70 weeks, prisoners throughout the prisons of Iran have led No to Execution Tuesday hunger strikes, involving many hundreds, if not thousands, of prisoners. Almost 1,500 executions have been carried out in Iran since the beginning of 2024. No to Execution Tuesdays is a prisoner-led movement that is fiercely calling to the rest of Iranian society and to the people of the world to rise up against such an atrocity. The International Emergency Campaign asks us, as you hear these words, take a moment to reflect on the tremendous difficulties these prisoners have to overcome to transfer their thoughts and emotions to send out over prison walls. It shows their initiative, organization, and a spirit of defiance against injustice of the murderous Iranian regime, but also going against the odds in a determination for a life of the mind, even in captivity.
In the heart of the dark nights of prison, in the silence of solitary confinement, amidst the shuddering of the nooses, and in the anxious yet hopeful gazes of prisoners, there are stories that need to be heard. Bamdad Bidar shares the voices that have been whispered in silence. We speak of the suffering that took place behind locked doors. Of the nights when the lights were on, but hope was not extinguished. Of the silences louder than a thousand screams. This is not a bid for tears or condolences. This is standing up against oblivion, against execution, against the official narrative. We want to record and honor the names, faces, suffering. These are stories that the official media shuns, but we reveal them like hidden treasure. Bamdad Bidar is an attempt to recount, share, and awaken. We present these pages to prevent dehumanization from becoming normalized. This is a place for storytelling, for awakening, for rethinking the meaning of justice in life and human dignity. Join us on this difficult but necessary journey.
From number one, In the Name of Humanity and the Pen. It was the first day of July that I was sent to solitary confinement and interrogation at the Ministry of Intelligence, and then transferred to Lacan Prison. This was the beginning of my acquaintance with someone I remember as having a kind smile and being exhausted from sleepless nights, with a beautiful tattoo on his hand that read, "Iran, I hope you will wake up." He had entered the prison that day, a little earlier than me. I remember his first look and the way he greeted me. His face bore the marks of the sufferings in his life. At that moment, I didn't know what kind of suffering he had endured, but I recognized it as akin to my own.
The Savagery of the Rulers, Part 3, on Executions. What happens during those hours of waiting that can overpower even the strongest of men? It's mandatory to have a forensic doctor present at the execution site, not to prevent the death of a human being, as required by the doctor's Hippocratic Oath, but to ensure that the condemned remain conscious until the very last moment. The condemned are deprived of even sedative drugs before execution so that they can fully experience the moment-by-moment approach of their own death. No creature other than humans is it capable of this level of cruelty. In the hands of those in power, people's fear of death became a tool of the rulers to take human life in various ways so that, through intimidation and repression, they could rule longer. This use of intimidation is directed only at the lower classes and the masses of people in a society. Drug cartels engage in the drug trade, but it's the petty drug dealers who get executed. Those who murder entire nations are considered heroes. But those who murder one individual are executed. Those who engage in major economic corruption are rewarded. And the petty thieves are hanged. You tell me, did the hungry person who was executed actually put an end to hundreds of thousands of lives just by signing their name? What about those who signed their names to unjust judicial rulings?
Harshak Prison. In the 6 months that I was in Harshak Prison, there was a woman whose execution was close to being carried out. Sanobar was a 23 or 24-year-old woman whom they accused of killing her husband. He had made his living off selling Sanobar's body. Once, when she resisted, he threw acid on her. In the struggle over the container, acid spilled onto the man's chest, causing his death. None of this evidence was enough to prevent the sentence of retribution from being carried out. Around 1 a.m., there was the piercing sound of hysterical screaming and a scuffle from Solitary that grabbed the attention of all of us. No one was able to sleep until afternoon. For years, the sound of those screams rang in my ears.
People are members of one another. They are created from the same roots. When one member is in pain, the other members cannot rest. You, who are unconcerned with the suffering of others, do not deserve to be called a human being. In the judicial system of most countries, the death penalty has either been abolished outright or is a punishment reserved for a few specific crimes. In the Islamic Republic, however, which since its inception has been built on blood, execution has become a method for intimidation and suppression. Under the Islamic Republic of Iran, the death penalty is not just a legal procedure. It is turned into something akin to an ideology. And it criminalizes even nonviolent protest against it. Countless long-term imprisonments are the result of criminalization that ranges from blasphemy, actions against national security, which is Iran's term for any action against the regime, murder, drug offenses, and rape or sodomy. Under the Islamic Republic, Iran has the highest number of executions in the world. The only way to emancipate Iranians is to overthrow this corrupt and dictatorial regime and replace it with something far better. So again, people can read that online magazine at revcom.us on the website for the International Emergency Campaign to Free Iran's Political Prisoners. We've been really wanting to bring their voices here on this show, a model of people who are saying no to the Islamic Republic of Iran, no to U.S. imperialism. We really urgently need to bring forward another way. And it brings us, I think, to our internationalist responsibility to defeat Trump MAGA fascism, yes, in the name of humanity, and to go forward to make a revolution to get rid of the system that's given rise to this fascism.
Yeah, I think it comes back to the theme that we've been getting into the show today of like, you know, stepping all the way back to like the people of the world, right? And the actual our responsibility in like fighting to actually make a revolution, you know, because things don't actually have to be this way, right? And not letting any of those things, whether it's happening right in front of us or whether it's happening across the world, like get normalized to those horrors.